Empower Radio presents The Miracle of Healing with Lisa Campion. Meet healers, learn different modalities, and hear empowering stories of people on their healing journey. The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio. Here's your host, Lisa Campion.
Hi, I'm Lisa Campion, and this is The Miracle of Healing on Empower Radio, where conscious people come together to explore the world of healing and heal the planet, one person at a time. So today I'm so pleased to have a kindred spirit on the show with me today, Dr. Lynn Robinson. And she uses her skills and experiences of, she's been a business professor, she's been a management consultant, a hospice volunteer. She's, like me, very psychic, super intuitive, and is now kind of an expert in this after-death communication, after-death experience. And she has sort of woven all of these things together and written this beautiful book. I loved her book. It was called Loving to the End and On, A Guide to the Impossibly Possible. And I found this book. It's a group of stories. It's very full of stories, very well written and beautiful and easy to read, that share the passing of people, but in such a loving way. And she describes it as being a combination of love story and also the story of people's passing, which sounds like those two things couldn't really go together, and yet somehow they do. And I was very, very moved by this book. Found it very comforting, very moving, and I'm super happy to speak with you today about this, Lynn. So thank you for being on the show with me today.
I am delighted to be here. Thank you for having me.
So tell me a little bit about this amazing book that you wrote, and how did you come to see these love stories and death stories really as the same thing?
Because they are. That sounds really simple, I know. But when you boil it all down and to the time that you're spending with someone who you care a great deal about, and you know that the physical life is ebbing away, and you cling to the person, you want to sit with the person, hold a hand, sometimes snuggle next to them in the bed as their physical their physicality becomes reduced, the love just has an opportunity to expand. And as you know from your own experience, that those of us who are able to communicate with the being who is no longer in a physical body, you have the opportunity to experience that love in new and different ways. And so it just continues. And even people who don't experience it as fully as I do and have, because people actually have given me messages for their family and friends. People I don't even know have given me messages to pass on, and it's funny trying to find the person it's meant for. But if you just think about it a little bit, the person who wants to experience that love just needs to open themselves up to it. One friend found, pennies or dimes I've had friends tell me both, on the ground, because the person had said, I'm going to shower you with pennies or whatever, before they died. And sometimes you just get a sense that the person is near and you're able to feel it and love it. I don't know if any of your audience are in the medical field, if they're nurses or hospice workers or physicians, but it's my hope that a lot of them will read this book too and be open to what is going on with their patients. Some of them already are, but many of them are so focused in on the physicality that they don't allow the blessings of the love experience that comes with dying. And sometimes they're so focused on preserving life that they don't have the opportunity to experience as much of the love and to share that with the families. And it's so there. I don't know if you've had that experience or not.
I have. I've actually, as a Reiki teacher, I love to train hospice people how to do Reiki. And many, many hospice workers here in New England where I live are trained in Reiki. And I think that they're really likely to be the ones that see the reverence in this experience. And that was the other thing that I came away from reading your book was feeling how reverent and sacred that that moment of death is for a lot of people. I think when Reiki people give Reiki to somebody that's passing, they'll pretty much all tell you that that person will sometimes use the Reiki energy to complete their passing. It's not to get better, right? But to help them pass.
Absolutely. Yes. And I remember one time being in a hospital room with a woman and I did not know. I was there as a hospice volunteer so that she was not there in her end time alone, so that no one dies alone. And the phone rang and it was her sister who couldn't get there. She lived 60 miles away or something. And because I knew that hearing is the last thing to go, and it's not always physical hearing. I think it really is hearing in a broader sense than that. But there are certain things that you can observe in someone whose body is breathing its last as they're listening or holding hands with someone else. At any rate, so the phone had rung, and I put it up to her sister's ear and encouraged the woman to speak to her. And she did, and she talked to her for a while. I couldn't hear everything that she was saying, but then as I heard more quiet, I put the phone to my ear and said, she seemed very content with your speaking. And that was a way that this woman, at the other end of the phone line could experience, have that love experience through the ether with an intermediary. I was there. I had to hold the phone up and so forth. But it was wonderful. And her sister was so pleased to have been able to do that because she had been so anxious that she couldn't get there. So it was a very loving moment in a less than physical space.
I love it how in your book you write a lot about people's experience, the after-death experience, which so we get a death visitation from somebody that's passed away, And I from my experience as a psychic, noticed that it's one of the most common psychic experiences that people have. Can you talk a little bit about your experiences or what you know about this after-death visitation?
It's available. It's more prevalent than people realize. One of the fun stories in the book, I think, was with a friend of mine who was dying. Her daughter was with her, and she wasn't quite ready to die. They figured that because she saw her father going down a sliding board, I mean, she saw it on the door as though the door was a movie screen, and she knew that her father was saying, you've got a little time left to play, but I'm right here, and I'm going to be here for you. And that was a matter of interpretation of theirs. But then there are also very specific things that sometimes you hear in words or images. I think one of the stories I tell in the book is about a younger cousin of mine who had a really gruesome passing. She had cancer, and it metastasized in her brain, and it was not a pleasant passing. But before she got to the point that she couldn't talk, I teased her and said, "Okay, Ham, I know you're going to be all right." And she said, "Look for the butterflies." And at the funeral, which was in a family graveyard in the country, there were so many butterflies. So she didn't speak in words, but she sent emissaries. I mentioned, I think, before we were having this conversation with the guests who are listening, that I had friends who were shamans, and I mentioned in the book that he showed up and spoke to me one night in my sleep, and the next morning I woke up and found that he had indeed died that night. I guess the book is just full of examples of actual speaking. The first chapter is about one of my dearest friends in the whole world, and I miss her tremendously. I miss the physical. And that's something we all have to admit, that even when we can speak, we still miss the physicality. As long as I'm in a physical body, I miss her physical body. But when her husband was dying, I went back to see him, and he said, I've still got some tidying up to do. I thought that was the strangest thing I'd ever heard. And then it turns out that that was a really key sentence to get her to believe that I really was actually hearing him. And she had tolerated that in me all my life and hers, but she had never really believed it. Later, she had an experience like that of her own. And then she had an experience with a neighbor who wanted someone to listen to her. And she called me later and said, I have to tell you what I just did, because this friend wanted to talk about having heard from her husband, and the husband was talking to her. And I sat there and listened, and I encouraged her. I never would have done that before. So that's the kind of thing that we can do to each other, is listen and then look for our own communications to verify that we too can hear. And sometimes it's nonsensical, but it's still there.
I love that. And I loved a lot of the examples that you give in the book about, might be birds or butterflies, dragonflies, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, anything like that, sort of, we can look through the signs and omens, or sometimes the messages come through other people. Like, you have delivered quite a few messages yourself to people that needed to communicate. What's that like for you when that happens?
Sometimes it's the most wonderful thing in the world, and sometimes I'm reduced to tears. Especially when I am flooded with the loving emotion that I am unable to pass on. It is so emotional for me, because I'm getting this download of energy that is intended for someone else, and when I can't get them to feel it, I have this wonderful emotion of love, and then the sadness of not being able to get the other person. But in a strange way, the fact that I cry and get so emotional usually allows the other person to realize that it's really something real. I'm not a crybaby. So they know if I'm doing that something's really going on. So it's absolutely fabulous for me to be able to be an intermediary that brings joy into someone else's life, that allows them to feel loved and loving all over again, and to know that you don't have to lose it. It's there.
Yeah, that was, I think, what was so comforting to me about your book. And I was saying to you before we started the show today that I felt such deep comfort, almost like stop being so afraid of dying myself. And it's funny, like you, like, I've been talking to dead people for a long time, and I think, well, why would I be afraid of death if I'm talking to dead people a lot? But in reading your book, I think where the comfort came for me is how love doesn't really ever stop. That's what touched me so much about it.
It touches me too. I'm constantly, you know, reinvigorated by the things that people tell me, and knowing that the love just doesn't quit. I mean, we keep saying the same thing over and over again, but that's the important part of it all. And I really didn't start out to write the book the way it turned out. It wrote itself. It said, this is really what needs to be said. And so that's what was said, is that cherish it, magnify it, let love be the guiding light while you're alive, and let it keep on going. And I guess it's kind of fun for me to think that when I'm no longer in this physical body, I'm going to be able to beam it down or beam it up or whatever it is we do to let someone else feel the love from another point of view, another dimension. I don't know what we can call it, just not from a physical body.
Do you get the sense that there's you know, about what happens to us when we pass away? Like, do you hear like a consistent message from the people that you speak to on the other side?
I don't think I've gotten too many particular messages about how the passage occurred. I know that they might clue me in a little bit about what's going on. In my earlier book, there was a story I told about being with my mother after she had died. Actually, I was out in Sedona. I was sitting on a cliff. I was meditating, and I became aware that I was flying, and I realized I was flying with my mother. I was moving through time and space, and I was with my mom, and it was just absolutely incredible. She and I had never shared this kind of stuff while she was living, at least not in any depth. And it was so amazing. It felt so good. And then someone said something in behind me, and I popped back into my physical body and realized that there were tears just rolling down my face from the joy and the beauty of having had that experience with my mother. And it took me a little while to sort of reintegrate with my body and to be able to get back to the joy, because, again, I was separated and I missed her again, as I had for a number of years at that point. So I don't know that anybody, I've had a few people who've had near-death experiences tell me about what had happened, but no one from the other side has particularly talked about how they passed. It's more about how wonderful it is and that they're able to still communicate. I think once they're on the other side, my impression, and it may be different for other people who get other kinds of information, but my impression is the method of passage doesn't really matter. They're there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they don't seem too worried about it by then.
Not the ones who communicate with me. I can't speak for anybody else.
So I'm so curious about the first book that you wrote. Remind me of the title of it, Coming Out of the Psychic Closet, something like that.
Coming Out of Your Psychic Closet, How to Unlock Your Naturally Intuitive Self.
I love it. Do you mind talking about that a little bit? It's I think it's still a thing. It's still something that people struggle with a lot.
Well, I wrote it because I used my intuition a lot as a management consultant and also as a college professor. And it bothered me that And also, I studied a lot about brain mechanisms and thinking mechanisms and how we come up with information, and et cetera. And it just bothered me that people denied their intuition when it can be such a strong force. I will say that some people do seem to be more highly intuitive than others, and some people tend to be more analytical than others, and that's great because we need both and we need them merged together. But the impetus for the book was just to allow people to focus more on their intuition. And I guess it was to free me up a little bit so that people would know that I really did use my intuition a lot and not just see me as this person with a bachelor's, master's, and doctorate in business, especially as a woman, because in my early career, I was usually one of the only female. I mean, I found a picture of myself recently with about 40 men. I was the consultant to this corporation, and I was the only woman in the picture. Everybody else was male. So I freed me up to write the book and hopefully freed a lot of other people up. And there's some stories in there that also talk about speaking with people who are no longer in physical bodies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, do you find that that at this point you still have to deal with people that think you're odd, or that there's like the weirdness factor? Is that still something that you struggle with or you experience?
Oh, I don't struggle with it anymore. Sure, there are people who think that, but that's their prerogative. It takes all different kind of people to make a world of people. So it's okay. It doesn't bother me. I know what is true for me, and they have their own truth, and that's okay.
And if you had some advice to give to people that are sort of newly opening to their intuition and are still struggling that, what would you tell them that might help them through that?
Well, one of the phrases I think I use in the book and I use frequently is suspend your disbelief. So instead of going into a situation saying, no, this can't happen, go into the situation saying, oh, I'm going to see what does happen. The other thing is to test things out. If you think you're having an intuitive insight, go with it. Test it out. If it turns out not to be, that's okay. I mean, sometimes, if you bake a cake, you do it the right way, and other times it's a mess. And the same thing's true with using your intuition. You learn to trust it. You learn to verify it. And the more you verify it, The more you learn to trust it, and then the more frequently it's available for you to use. Actually, I sometimes can feel shifts in thinking in my brain, but that may be different. That may not be what a beginner would do. I did have an experience, I don't remember if I put it in either of the books, with a young woman who I have an IONS, International Association of Near-Death Studies group that I started here. I'm not a near-deather, but because I'm an after-death communicator, I was empathetic with people who had had that experience and didn't have anybody to talk to. And we had one young lady come for a long time, and her family was not very supportive of that experience. And after she became well enough from whatever had caused the near-death experience, she got a job in a funeral parlor, and she was very comfortable there because she was not afraid of death at all. So she was able to get a really good job there until she was comfortable until she realized a lot of the people who were no longer in their bodies were around near their bodies trying to get messages to their families that they were fine and they could get through to her. And they would try to get her to let the families know they were fine. So I had to work with her to turn it off rather than on.
Yeah.
And she was able to learn to do that. So I think a consciousness of what you're doing, that's why I said, you know, if your intuition works, great, remember it. If it doesn't, just say, okay, it didn't that time. But for every time you remember that your intuition was on target, it's going to reinforce your capacity to use your intuition more effectively and more frequently.
Well, that's great advice. I really like it. And I like what you said about testing it out, proving it out. You know, and I'm a person like that too, that even though I'm a psychic and I've been doing it for so long, I'm not sure I would believe in the things that I talk about unless they had happened to me. That's why I believe in them. So I think we sort of have to have our own experiences, and then we can feel that belief a little more.
Yeah, it's like sometimes you just know something. When that happens, say, oh, wow, how did I know that? And realize mm-hmm. that you've had this intuitive moment. Sometimes we just take knowing things for granted without saying, where did that come from?
Yeah, that's great. It's good advice. I wondered when I was reading your book whether this reading this book would help people be less afraid of dying. And I find that in the working with people that are passing that I've done, I haven't done as much as you, but I've done it a little, that those people, the ones that really suffer are the ones that are not sure there's something after. Like if you think you're just going to disappear into nothingness, that's
for a lot of people. I have observed that sometimes they hold on, but it isn't always true. I remember the story that was told me by the son of someone who is famous in the medical industry. I'm not going to say what because I don't have permission to tell the name and the story together. But it was his father and his stepmother, and they were very spiritual people, and the stepmother was dying. And his father would read to her, and one of the things he would read was the Tibetan Book of the Dead. Mm-hmm. And they got to the part, which is something they had read together before, and they got to the part in the book about the bardo. And his wife opened her eyes for the first time in a couple of days, sat up and said, that's where I am, and that's what I want to tell you about. So while in her physical body, she was still, it looked as though she was lingering, and he couldn't understand why she was still lingering. And so it wasn't fear for her. Evidently, she was doing some sort of spiritual processing before she left her body.
Wow, that's fascinating.
And I have always found that story to be extremely fascinating and interesting to me, and it gave me a totally different look at, well, people? Are they just afraid, or is something else going on? And in her instance, obviously something else was going on.
So Lynn, your book is fantastic, and I'm wondering if you could share with people how they can get it.
Well, my book, Loving to the End and On, A Guide to the Impossibly Possible, is available online at Barnes & Noble and at Amazon or through the publisher Balboa. I assume if you have other bookstores in your cities, you can get them to order. I know bookstores are fewer around here, and they don't order the way they used to. Let's put it that way. So I encourage you to go to Amazon or Barnes & Noble. I know that it's easy there, or to Balboa, and get the book. And if you want to give me some feedback, you can go to www.lynnbrobinson.com. And if you go to the contact page, there's a way that you can shoot me some information, or you can leave a comment at Amazon or Barnes & Noble. I do check those occasionally and have absolutely been thrilled with a couple of the comments that have been left by people who were helped by the book. It just makes me glad that I spent the time and the effort to write it. If it helped and eased the pain and improved the pleasure of continuing to love.
I'm glad you did too, because I thought your book was fabulous, and I want to thank you for being on the show with me today. It was great speaking with you.
Thank you. I've totally enjoyed our conversation. And thank the people who are listening for sticking here with us and caring about the people they love who are still here, and those who may be on the way out, and those who've already left.
And
I hope they'll open their intuition and their wisdom to be with those people who are no longer in physical bodies but still available. It's a really warm feeling.
I hope so, too. And thank all of you guys for joining us here today on The Miracle of Healing, where we are healing the planet one person at a time, here on Empower Radio.